Mr. Isaacson, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You and Mr. Badgley were both involved in the trial below, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And he wrote the blue brief and you've got the gray brief and the argument.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor. Should I go ahead and state my name for the record?
Yes, please.
And begin. If it may please the court, my name is Brian Isaacson. I'm the attorney for the appellants, Daniel Pierce and Hendy Appleton. The reason for this appeal is that the lower courts have imposed Section 172 limitations upon IRC 56D2A. One little I. It's well stated in our brief, and I'll refer to it hereinafter as one little I. The problem is that there are no such limitations expressly stated in the statute, and therefore we ask the Court of Appeals to reverse the lower court by applying the rules of statutory construction and rule that there are no 172 restrictions on one little I. We feel that this is consistent.
The government relies heavily, sir, in its brief on the case of Merlo against the commissioner in the Fifth Circuit.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you didn't respond to that in your gray brief. I didn't see any mention of Merlo.
We did, Your Honor. Merlo.
I didn't see any. I looked in the table of authorities and I reread your gray brief last night. I didn't see you taking Merlo on. As I understood Merlo, you can correct me, that in Merlo there were two issues. The issue B, the alternative net operating loss issue, is on all fours with the facts of this case.
Yes, Your Honor.
And we used to say in law school, you know, on all fours with, meaning that there's no factual distinction.
Yes, Your Honor.
So if you were in the Fifth Circuit, right, you'd lose for sure.
Well, it was kind of odd when we argued that before the Fifth Circuit because the panel of judges said
Were you arguing Merlo?
Yes, Your Honor. And the panel of judges said that we don't know the first thing about the alternative minimum tax. In fact, we're wondering why, in fact, it's here. And
they may have said that, sir, but their opinion from page 623 through the end of the case, 624, two columns, it strikes me that is a ruling of the Fifth Circuit that if we ruled in your favor, we would be in direct conflict with the Fifth Circuit.
That is correct, Your Honor, and we would have the basis to take this case up on certiorari.
Well, if we ruled for you, you wouldn't take the case up. The government would take the case
government
up on cert.
Take the case up. Let's talk about, Your Honor,
Just a technical point. The brief cited other cases pending before the Ninth Circuit, and there's a lead case called Norman. Has that been decided yet?
That's not been decided. In fact, oral argument's not been scheduled in that case either.
Right. Sorry to interrupt.
Are you on all these cases?
Yes, Your Honor.
You and Mr. Badgley, right?
Yes, sir.
A quest.
Okay.
Don Quixote.
Well, it is a quest because it's an issue that impacts so many people today, and it's a
quest on which thus far every time you've come to the bat, there have been three fast strikes and you're called out, right?
Well, not exactly.
In which case have you gotten some favorable traction in terms of a decision?
In none of these cases have we gotten favorable traction, but we have gotten full rulings of the tax court. And if I can proceed, this is the problem with each of these cases is that the 172 restrictions are imposed under Section 2 little I. They're imposed nowhere under Section 1 little I. And I think the reason for this is that 172 has been in existence for so long that there's an inclination by the courts to try to simplify the alternative minimum tax to try to
laudable
a lot of it
a laudable thing, correct?
Which is
simplifying Altman tax.
It is, but at the same time, the courts have to follow the rules of statutory construction, which means that they have to treat one little I differently from two little I. In all of the cases, in the other courts, they've treated these exactly the same. And what this does is it has the impact of violating the rules of statutory construction, which states basically that a statute ought to be construed so that if it can be prevented, no clause, sentence, or words shall be superfluous or insignificant. And that's Babbitt versus...
I'm right. The purpose, what you're trying to achieve is to minimize your Altman tax liability in the year in which the option's exercised. Isn't that right?
No, Your Honor. It's in the year of sale.
Do you recognize Altman liability in the year of exercise, right?
You recognize Altman liability in the year of exercise.
But that's the Altman liability. The actual liability you don't... enjoy until the sale.
But at the time of sale, there is an alternative minimum tax adjustment under one little I. And that alternative minimum tax adjustment, it's not just simply the net operating loss. It's the difference.
Which tax year Altman are you trying to alter? The year of exercise or the year of sale?
The year of sale, Your Honor. And the year of sale is based upon the adjustment under Section 1.
But it's a carryback, right?
Does it
carry back to the year of exercise?
It would carry back under the rules of statutory.
But aren't you trying to minimize the Altman tax in the year of exercise?
Yes, we're trying to get to a carryback.
Right. I mean, you're getting
but
your...
But the case before us is for the tax year 2001, which is the year in which the stock was sold.
Yes, Judge Lynn. In fact, that's the reason for this entry is what we're asking the court to rule is what amount should go on line 9 of the Form 6251. And the difference is whether or not capital law, whether or not the 172 limitations are imposed under one little I. We know that they're imposed under two little I, but the distinction is that one little I are to be treated differently from two little I. And so under the statute, you can't impose the limitations under one little I and two little I. It's an impermissible construction of the statute to impose the 172 limitations under two little I. Under one little I. Yes, Your Honor.
If your theory is correct, then it's... seems to me that would sort of minimize or perhaps nullify the need for the Tax Relief Act of 2006.
Well, the Tax Relief Act of 2006 told the American public that they get their credits back irrespective of the treatment of one little I or two little I. And the language by the staff member, where it says that the $3,000 limitation may be imposed, he left open for the fact that the courts have yet to decide the issue. But Congress said, regardless of how the courts decide the one little I, two little I issue, we will refund the credits over the next 5 years. But the caveat is that rule only applies to those who could afford to full pay their alternative minimum tax in the first place. In the case of Mr. Pierce and Ms. Lund, what happened is the value of the stock dropped so quickly that by the time April came around, they couldn't afford to pay the tax. And so they won't receive the benefit of the new legislation. Let me talk about the basis that the courts have actually said that one little I is to be treated the same as two little I, and they cite extensively to Treasury Regulation 1.55A. The problem with this reference the courts make is the Treasury Regulation still does not allow one little I to be treated the same as two little I. And the rules of statutory construction that we've cited is that the IRS is not permitted to legislate by adding terms or requirements to a statute that are not inherently there. And it's unquestionable that Congress did not place the 172 restrictions under one little I. And then Treasury regulation itself, it states, except as otherwise provided by statute, that all other code provisions shall apply. Well, in determining the alternative minimum taxable income, well, first of all, the statute contains a very express exception by treating one little I differently from two little I. And then second is 56A4 specifically says that the rules of IRC 56 will be in lieu of 172 in the interconnecting statutes. Now, the language in lieu of 172, it's a very significant departure from the regular taxable income. And I really don't feel that the courts picked up on it in their attempts to make sense out of this whole statute. And the problem is that it doesn't make sense, but we have to follow the sequence of the statute. And we can't just throw it out the window because it doesn't lead to a result that the courts like. What's interesting is under the language in lieu of, we have a very specific sequence for applying the alternative minimum tax NOL. It starts with a regular tax NOL, which in this case was zero, and then under one little I, it's required to be adjusted, and under two little I, it's required to further be adjusted. And then if you go back up to D1A, there's even a 90% haircut after the adjustments. And so the two provisions are not consistent. And so the trade-off that Congress allowed was Congress would give a haircut at the end of the calculation, but at the same time, they would allow the NOL to be increased by the adjustment amount. And that's the way that the statute reads.
You're well into your rebuttal. Would you like to save it?
Sure.
Fine, then we will hear from the government.
Yes.
Ms. Erickson?
May it please the court. Good morning. Marian Erickson for the government. I agree with opposing counsel that we need to follow the sequence of the statute here, but I disagree with him about what that sequence is. I think as the Fifth Circuit held in the Merlot case, before you even get to 56, you have to understand that the regular rules apply. And as he pointed out in the regulations 1.55, it explicitly says that unless there's an exception that's dictated by statute, regulation, or other published guidance, then all the regular rules apply in computing the alternative minimum tax. And as the Fifth Circuit held, what that means is that 172, the limitations of 172 apply before you even get to 56. And so that your starting point is that for an individual taxpayer, you already have to deal with the limitations and losses that are imposed by 172 and by 1211. And I'm not sure that we even need to talk about the sequence of computations under 56D because the disagreement we have occurs before that. It has to do with whether or not the regular rules apply. And the truth is there's simply nothing out there to support the taxpayer's argument here that those rules do not apply. There's nothing explicit. There's nothing even implied. There's a certain amount of statute history of the statute that is quite clear what the intent of Congress was. And I think, Judge Lynn, you're correct in pointing out that the Tax Relief Act of 2006 would not have been necessary if the taxpayer's interpretation of these statutes was correct. That relief was intended to help some of the taxpayers who were caught in a bit of a bind because of the problems that occurred with those high-tech stocks tanking so quickly back in the early 2000s. I really have nothing else to say. I believe our brief says it pretty clearly, unless the court has any questions.
What do you understand his one little I, two little I argument to be?
Your Honor, I don't quite understand that argument, to tell you the truth. He seems to be...
What sections of the code is he talking about?
He's talking about 56.
Excuse me?
56D, I believe, is what he's referring to.
56B?
D as in dog.
Yeah.
And my whole argument is that we don't even need to get to that point. That what he's saying is that before you get there, you don't deal with 172 and what the government's saying and what all the courts who have ruled on this case, on this issue, including the Fifth Circuit, which is, as you say, exactly the same issue on all fours here, have said that the starting point for 56D is that you've already imposed the loss limitations of 172 and 1211. Then I don't quite understand what his distinction is he's trying to make between one and two. I apologize.
I just am trying to 56D1?
56D2, big A, little I, and little 2I, I believe is the section that he relies upon.
I didn't understand the one little I, two little I. Where's the...
After the capital...
Is there a D1A?
A D2A, I believe, Your Honor.
I see his reference to 56D2A, little I.
If you look on page 34 of the government's brief, we've recreated the statute there. I believe that's what he's referring to. That's 56D2... capital A, and then there's a subclause I and subclause 2, little I.
Which page is that again?
Page 34. It's after the first blue sheet in our appellee brief.
34 in the back of your brief?
Yes, sir.
Wait a second. Oh, I see. So this is D2... A is
so little I says section 58 and double I says section 57?
Yes, ma'am. There's no clear reason to me why those two sections would have the effect that he's arguing for them. I simply don't understand the logic of that argument.
Well, the reason why I asked is that he seems that's all his eggs are in that basket.
Yes, sir. And my argument is that we don't...
I'm sort of trying to figure out exactly what the problem is. I mean, I understood that your argument is that the general rules in 172 apply before you go to Altman. So if you're going to come to the Altman party, you play by the 172 rules.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's what other courts seem to have said, but I was having trouble grasping the significance of the distinction between one little I and two little I and why under two little I, he said clearly the 172 rules apply. That was what he said.
I believe so. I'm afraid
but
I can't.
I didn't see anything, and when we finally found two little I, I didn't see anything in there. That, I mean, if there's a concession that the 172 rules apply in two little I, then why wouldn't they apply in one little I?
I believe they apply to both, Your Honor.
Yeah.
We urge this court to affirm. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Rags Isaacson?
Well,
any commentary on the colloquy we just had?
Yes, Your Honor. Her statement that we don't need to get 56.
Can you clarify the one lie, two lie for me? Just maybe I'm daft here, but if we look at page 33 and 34 of the government's brief, the red brief.
Could you take a look at page 5 of my reply brief?
Page 5, sure.
Okay, yes.
Page 5 of your reply brief, okay.
Yes.
Now, where is one little I?
Okay, it's up on top. It's A2, A one little I. Where it says
wait. On page 5?
Yes, Your Honor.
There's a little, two little I.
There's where it says subparagraph 2, adjustments to net operating loss computation.
Yeah. That's the same provision we were looking at a moment ago.
The same one that's in the government's brief.
Your Honor. Okay, under one little I, it says to be determined with the adjustments provided in this section. And the adjustment in this section is Section 56. Okay, and incentive stock options are an adjustment under this section, under 56B4. I'm sorry, 56, or 56B3. And the reason, here's the problem, is if you take a look at the flush language, the flush language only applies 172C to 2i. It doesn't apply it to 1i. So therefore, her argument, the government's argument that...
Well, I don't understand that. It says... The net operating loss for such year under 172C shall, and then it that's above little I and double I.
Right, but it starts with the regular tax net operating loss under 172C. Okay, and so that's where 172C is taken into consideration. Then after that, under one little I, it's determined with the adjustments provided in this section.
Right.
Then under 2i, it's further reduced by items of tax preference determined under 57. And then under the flush language, it says that an item of tax preference shall be taken into account under Clause 2 only to the extent that such item increased the amount of NOL under 172C.
Right.
Okay, so there is no application of 172C under 1i.
Well, I'm not sure that necessarily follows. I mean, both paragraph little I and paragraph II are under a heading that talks about net operating loss under section 172C, both sections. Now, the language you refer to as the flush language at the very end talks about tax preferences.
Yes, Your Honor.
Which may be peculiar to paragraph II because paragraph II relates to tax preferences.
Well, Your Honor, II relates to tax preferences under Section 57. And incentive stock option is a tax adjustment under this section, which is 56. So therefore, it's governed under one little I. So under the sequence of the statute, if you break it down, it requires you to start with the NOL under 172C, if there is one. If there's none, the 172C shall be zero. Then under one little I, you're required to make an adjustment, okay, to the net operating loss. Under two little I, you're required to reduce under Section 57, but the reductions under 57 are subject to 172C. In comparison, the adjustments under one little I are not subject to 172C.
All right, I understand your point. All right, thank you. Thank both counsel. The case is submitted. That concludes our session.
All rise. The Honorable Court is adjourned until tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock.